This hour was brought to you by Alpine Credits. Do you own your home and need a loan? Alpine Credits can help. Visit alpinecredits.ca to learn more.
Hour 2 Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN app, your home smart speaker, and up on TSN 4. Brian Hazio, Doug, Jeff O'Neill, Jamie Noodles McLennan, Ray Ferraro, our TSN hockey analyst, will join us here in just a moment. And big one for the Raptors tonight. Probably the last time we can say that, because they're playing Washington tonight, and technically they're still within range, and we'll see what happens. And we'll get to that a little bit later this afternoon. Again, Ray's coming up. The Jays with a big come-from-behind win last night. Well, it's not like they were down big, but, you know, a massive eighth inning. Robbie Ray has the tightest uniform in baseball, and that's saying something, because there's a lot of guys in baseball that's their move, specifically pitchers. Like, they go with the really tight pants and
tweeted a couple weeks ago. That guy better be careful out there with those.
He had the hungry bum going last night, though, I'll tell you that.
Big time. Big time. Nervous. But he pitched well. You know, he gave them everything you can expect them to give you. Not walking anybody at this point, throwing smoke. Looks pretty good. So, he can wear whatever he wants, as long as it matches whatever the MLB protocols are. Go for it.
Yeah, it's such a weird season for them. I mentioned it the other day. It's like, kind of get up, kind of get down. Just, they're hovering around mediocrity, right? They're just lose a couple, win a couple, catch fire a little bit, positive things happen, and then some setbacks. But I'll tell you what, that Springer news today, Brian, like, I'm sorry. That's a butchering of managing a high-end talent, and I don't know if they'd let the player get in his own way and they couldn't stop the player from himself, but you can't do that. Like, I always talk about their sports facility and their sports science and all this, but, like, you can't do it. You can't do it, man.
You knew he was going on the IL, too. Like, I don't know if I feel bad for Charlie Montoyo or if I'm getting increasingly frustrated.
Well, take
Montoyo.
It back to the first comment where he was like, yeah, he's doing good, but he can't run. So.
Well, even Atkins said today, he's like, no, he's getting better, but he's not going to be back after 10 days. So what is it? Like, you can't be feeling good, getting better, but then you're still a week away from this guy even being a possibility to get activated off the 10-day IL, and you're already saying he's not coming back in a week.
Yeah.
Like, it's going to be extended beyond the minimum days of a 10-day IL stint. So the mismanagement is the real significant part of this. And yes, the player has a say. The player's probably pushing. He was hungry to get in there. But you fill out the lineup card, and you've got to make a decision that is in the best interest of the player and the team. And the messaging beyond it, to me, is just an absolute disaster. You know, like, you pull him Sunday for fatigue, and then you try to convince everyone, oh, it's always a scheduled day off on the Monday. Okay, maybe. But pinch-hit situation, 101, can't go. And then afterwards, Montoyo's just scrambling, trying to come up with an explanation. And then the next day, he's like, I don't know what to tell you. But no, he's not going on the IL. And then the next day, he's on the IL. Like, it's just, back and forth, back and forth. Montoyo either doesn't have the information or doesn't know how to handle these situations.
That's what it is. I don't think there's a disconnect between management and upper management and the manager. But it's almost like they're saying, like, you got to say least amount possible. You know what I mean? Like, he's getting put in a spot where he's trying to manage that, and he just doesn't look comfortable either. You know, he's playing. They shut him down. Like, I don't know what is wrong with him, but they better shut him down to the point where when he comes back, he plays and he's comfortable and he doesn't re-injure something.
That's what's concerning, is now he may be back to square one with the quad.
Right.
And obviously they're already making the call. Like, he's going to be on there beyond the 10-day stint, even though it's retroactive to Monday. So he's not coming back by next weekend.
Right.
You know, we could
Ridiculous,
be talking
man.
A couple of weeks, 3 weeks, and all that for him to play two games and through the fifth inning on Sunday or sixth inning on Sunday. You know, and it's ultimately very disappointing, but you've got to handle this stuff properly. Like, he's your go-to guy. He's the prized possession. And it is on the player to make sure that he's being honest with his body and honest with his possible performance. And yet the messaging to me is just, you're confusing people and you're confusing fans who are excited to see this guy go. You want to know what's going on here. And we already feel disconnected because you're in Dunedin, right? Like,
right.
You can't get down to the park. You can't get up close and personal. And I feel like teams in the era of COVID have actually taken advantage of it more than anything, as opposed to being even more upfront and transparent and realizing, okay, this is really difficult because no one's around and no one can get up close and personal. We better make sure we're upfront here about the info. They're actually saying we could take advantage of this. It's not just the Jays. Every team is doing it and saying we can keep everything in-house. We don't have to give up anything because we just got to be on a Zoom meeting for 5 minutes and then we're out of here. And that's kind of what it looks like it basically happened here. So we'll get back into that later this afternoon. Brian Windhorst will join us in about an hour. Go ahead, Noodles.
No, I was just going to say, you're talking about an injury that needs to be managed. You want everyone to see it. It's a good segue to go into Frederik Andersen, who played today, and managing an injury and looking at the big picture. And that's the type of stuff that where, you know, if you look at Kyle like and what they're trying to do with Freddie Andersen is give him a couple, you know, a period and a half, see how he feels, readjust. Like, they're just running out of runway as far as, you know, how much time they have to get Freddie back into games. But you can clearly see what they're trying to do.
Well, exactly. And you're waiting for him to basically give you the thumbs up, like, I'm right. ready to rock. And today was a part of the step, you know, for sure, one of the steps towards making it a difficult decision for Sheldon Keefe. Joining us now on the Maple Toyota Hotline here is our hockey analyst Ray Ferraro. How do you analyze 31 minutes and 14 shots in the minors for a guy like Freddie Andersen? Like, how is this going to unravel over 2 weeks?
Well, I mean, Noodles is the best guy to ask. I mean, the shots are different. There's, you know, the play's more scrambly. The play's not as predictable. But it's more. But the unpredictability is probably a good thing. To see, you know, as he starts to, you're not just doing a drill where the shots come from the, you know, kind of the same location on the ice all the time and then you move to the next drill. So I think there's benefit to it. I just heard the tail end there when Noodles was saying about, you know, you can see clearly what the, you know, what the plan is. And I mean, the plan right now is that it has to be right that he's the backup. I'd rather have Freddie Andersen as my backup, all due respect to David Rittich.
I think so.
And then if something goes wrong with Campbell, then you got to get him in. But he's got to play some, no?
I agree. And that's where I was going to go is if you're looking at it, the Leafs are probably treating this like an offseason for Frederik Andersen. So today was his first exhibition game. It's a half a game. Maybe next game it's like two periods or something. Like, I don't know. I should check. It's on me. The Marlies, I'm sure they play again this weekend.
Yeah.
So maybe he gets two periods next game, and you're constantly reassessing. So all of a sudden he's gotten into two game situations. So with Kiprusoff, this is my only experience to draw on. My starter, I always gave him half game, two periods, then full game, and then into the regular season. That might be the same progression they're doing with a guy like Frederik Andersen. He might be able to get into four actual hockey games, two in the minors, two in the NHL, or some form of something, and be at least game ready in case Jack Campbell, you know, stubs his toe or gets injured. Like, that's what I would be looking
at.
That's
best case scenario, I think.
I think so, too.
Yep, I agree.
See, I do think, I read it somewhere, and it stuck with me, is that, you know, if when Jack Campbell was 11-0, that to me felt like a hot streak. Like, I don't know, like unrealistic. His save percentage was 9 whatever, like crazy numbers. Right now it feels like this year, this is Jack Campbell. Like, he is a above average top starter. Like, is he the best starter in the league? No, but he's a top starter because his record tells me that. He's now played 19 games, right? So that's a significant number of games. This is him this year. Might not be him next year, and who cares? It's him this year. So, you know, we've talked several times about, you know, if Andersen could get back, who would start game one? And I always said, well, I think Anderson's better, and I think Andersen would be the guy. I don't think that anymore. It's been too many games, too long of him away, but of Campbell doing what he's done.
I
exactly
agree.
Like, listen, opinions are subject to change and situations are subject to change. That's life. You know, things develop and they go in different directions. And I've had the same viewpoint. Like, a month ago, I had a different viewpoint than I do today. And part of that is Campbell, and part of it's Freddie Anderson. Like, you know, the greatest saying, and I've used it a lot recently, that your best ability in sports is availability. I don't know if he's available. So it may just be a moot point anyway. If he's not at 100% or not, even if he is at 100%, you look at him, you're like, he's rusty. You can't play a rusty goalie in the playoffs.
You're right.
Like, and you just can't do it.
Here's the other thing I want to add on. Let's take out Vasilevsky last year, because Vasilevsky is not available to the Leafs. But, you know, Ray just talked about a starting goaltender or 1 and 1A.
Yep.
Washington won. You started Grubauer. Holtby took over. Pittsburgh won. It was Fleury that started, and then Murray took over. In Chicago, it was Darling that played, and then it went to Crawford. Like, there might be a scenario where you use both. And I think what the Leafs are going and looking at is we need to get everyone healthy. And I think I liked Sheldon's comments today. It's a good problem to have. Now, he's going to have to choose who he wants to play. But at least if all three guys are healthy, you go, well, I'm going to start here. And if this doesn't work out, I can pivot to here. But you want health. And that's what they're working to do, is to get Frederik Andersen available to them if they need him. It might be game two. It might be game one. Might be game two. It could be game five.
It could be the second round.
Second round.
You know, it could be at any point.
You're right. So that's the way I look at it is, you're right. Like, Tampa Bay, Vasilevsky, I think, played every minute last year for Tampa. And so he should. He's the best goalie, if not, you know, right there. They don't have that. So they're going to do the tandem situation, and that's more like what we've seen in the last 4 or 5 years.
There's been a consistent theme of that, and I think they're probably preparing for it and almost expecting that to be the case. Ideally, one guy takes it, runs with it. You never have to worry about it. Great, but
right. You're
not living in an ideal world all the time. Generally, you're not, come the sports world. The lineup tonight, because of some injuries, there's some guys moving around. And what I find interesting is Wayne Simmonds, according to the morning skate, again, this may change come game time, and Sheldon Keefe moves things around all the time, but he has been consistently on a line with Mikheyev and Kerfoot over the past couple of weeks. And I get the impression like Keefe is trying to get his lineup set. You know, he's trying to figure out what is going to be there come opening night. And for him, he's moved Simmonds off that line down to a line with Engvall and Spezza playing the middle of the ice. And my spidey senses are going off a little bit. And I'm wondering if the battle, if everyone is healthy, we know Foligno's playing, Hyman's playing. If it's between Galchenyuk and Simmonds,
no.
For who's going to play? No? Okay.
My guess is no. I just think Simmonds is a veteran guy that's playoff tested, and he's like, if you're talking about the lineup starting opening night, I would my bet would be Simmonds would be on it. Ray?
Does it matter who they play?
I don't know.
Like, you know, maybe one of them fits better against another team.
Don't you think?
Although
Simmonds,
when I look at it, both teams are big that they're going to play.
That's what, like, I say. Like, sorry to interrupt. Don't you think Simmonds would be better suited to play against Montreal? Like, I mean, Montreal plays.
I guess let me lay out what I'm saying here. Is what I'm wondering is I think it's going to be a fourth line of Thornton on the left side, Spezza on the right side. I think it'll be Riley Nash if he's healthy, but it could be Adam Brooks. It could be, you know, I guess it could be Engvall. But I think that's what you're looking at. I think you're looking at Mikheyev and Kerfoot as two of the three guys in the third line. I have been of the belief Foligno and Hyman are also in the top six, but they might be thinking Hyman's better on that third line, like Mikheyev, Kerfoot, and Hyman there. So if that's the case, then maybe it opens the door for Foligno to stay with Matthews and Marner and Galchenyuk to stay in the lineup. And if that's the case, again, based on doing the numbers and crunching the numbers, Simmonds would be the odd man out, if that's the case, if they want to play it that way.
This better not go viral, Hayes.
Let me ask you this.
I'm not saying it would be my lineup. We just did our lineups on Friday.
We did our lineups.
On mine.
We did our lineups, and I had Hyman on the third line, and I did have Galchenyuk on. I just didn't have Riley Nash. There's no. I don't think there's a guarantee that Riley Nash is playing game one of the playoffs.
He may not.
Like, that's the thing. You could have. Do you hate Jason Spezza at center ice?
Like, I don't love it. I can't say. I don't want to say I hate it, but he's looked pretty comfortable on the wing. Ray, go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead, Ray.
I believe that one thing that we've seen pretty regularly from Keith is, and I'm going to say this playoffs or not, is that the lineup is going to, I think it's going to be fluid. Something's going to look great. Something's not going to look great. Something will look great that they didn't think was going to look good. They'll move people around. So that I think in a lot of years, we look at that game one lineup and go, that's it. Like, that's what they're running. I don't feel that this year. And it seems because he's really comfortable and he trusts people in different spots. So maybe against Winnipeg, I would want Hyman on the third line because I think you need a top nine more so than you do against Montreal. Like Winnipeg's top nine, assuming Ehlers is back, and and we don't know that, that's a really deep 1-9 team. Montreal doesn't have the same thing. Maybe you have Foligno and Hyman with Tavares and Matthews if you're playing Montreal. But maybe you want to spread it out differently against Winnipeg. And I think that's the type of thing we'll see because that's kind of the way Keith has gone about it.
Yeah, he's more prone to moving guys around than his predecessor, that's for sure. I mean, by now we know exactly what Babcock was doing, and Keith keeps you on your toes. And maybe I'm reading too much into tonight's lineup based on where guys are moving around. And, again, that could change by the second period. But something has to give. The point is, if everyone's healthy, they've got a lot of guys, and guys who have been playing regular, that someone's going to be out. And whether it's Galchenyuk, whether it's, Simmons, whoever it's going to be, Spezza, Thornton, I don't know. But someone's going to be on the outside looking in. We discussed what happened at the Garden last night a lot in the 4 p.m. hour. The New York Rangers and the Washington Capitals have offered us up a ton of content for the better part of 72 hours.
Yeah.
And last night was more than I expected. I thought maybe someone was going to go at Tom Wilson, which did end up happening. I wasn't expecting three fights off the draw to open the game and six fights in 5 minutes. What did you make of the whole scene?
This will be kind of goofy, but I didn't even tune in at the start because I knew, I felt there was going to be nonsense and I had some other things to do. I'm like, I'll just wait till the intermission of Montreal and Ottawa because, of course, we got the Canadiens tonight. And I'm like, I want to watch the first period here. So I went back and when I'm looking, I'm like, oh boy, 1 second and there's the three fights. My first thought when I saw it was, oh, Carl Hagelin must have loved being in the starting lineup.
No kidding.
It was my first thought. I'm like, he must have been out there, and, you get that buzz, and everybody, there's a moment there where you're like, okay, this is going to happen. And I'm sure he must have looked around and go, I hate this. What am I doing out here? Yeah. I'm 180 pounds. Yeah. Like, I don't know. It was nonsense. It was predictable. It could have been avoided.
How would it have been avoided though?
Wilson was suspended.
But let me ask you this,
Ray.
That's where I went, and I just wanted your opinion on this. I believe, and we established yesterday, like Wilson, it would have been easy for them to give him one game to at least just avoid the buildup, and if something crazy happened, then you're avoiding lawsuits and all of that. Like we talked about that yesterday, but don't you think a guy like Mark Messier and then, with his comments, and then there's been other pundits saying, this team is too soft, and then all of a sudden the owner fires the president and the general manager and goes, yeah, we have philosophy differences and all these things. Like, I almost thought, I felt there would have been fights regardless. If Wilson was in or not, there just might not have been as many, and it may have just been fighting. It was almost like they were trying to establish themselves with a new GM.
This gets back, funnily enough, this gets back to respect and disrespect in a lot of ways.
We
were looking at it from the same lens. I didn't think Edler had to fight, but I don't think the suspension was relevant in why Simmons decided he was going to fight. And I saw it the same way last night, Ray, is even if Wilson got 20 games, I think the Rangers were like, we have to do something here. Like, we got to fight to prove that we're tough enough to fight. Whether that's goofy or not, Smith wouldn't have gone Wilson.
There would have been one less fight for sure.
One less for sure, right. And maybe even the aftermath after that would have been over. It may have just been off the draw.
Look, the league by their decision, right or wrong, you don't agree with their decision. I think Wilson should have been suspended. I think he should have been suspended for general nonsense.
Right.
Quite frankly, if they can, they're breaking that thing down to the minute detail, and they're like, you got $5,000 for the punch, but nothing after really sort of met the criteria. Good. So suspend him for one game for nonsense. I don't know. They do it all. There's got to be a way. And if there isn't, there's got to be latitude to explore that. That's my view. My view is also that I don't think that I think the league invited the nonsense by not dealing with it more harshly.
Ray, where do you think this leaves George Parros? Like, I think he had a comment today where he's like, I don't want to do the job if the players don't think I'm doing a good job or the GMs don't respect me. Just where do you think he lies in all this in the aftermath of it all?
You know, that's a good one, because I don't know, like, I don't even know how the information flows. Like, who elects George Parros?
Mm-hmm.
Who votes for him, who supports him, who critiques him? What do the players have to do with it? Nothing. They don't. My thought is they don't have anything to do with who is the head of player safety. Isn't that all from the league? So, like, what does it matter what the players think? But I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong.
Well, there's a committee there, right? Like Pronger used to, Shanny used to do it, and then it was, you know, I think Pronger was part of that committee. I believe Ray Whitney is a part of the committee right now in player safety. I think it's not just one guy. George Parros is the head of it. My understanding is that, you know, he goes through an elimination process, goes through the plays and all that, and they talk about it. And
No, I don't mean that, Noodles. I mean, like, when he says, if the players don't think I'm doing a good job, but what do the players have to – they don't have a say in it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's my understanding.
Oh, I think you've got it spot on. I mean, ultimately, it comes down to Gary Bettman makes a call on something like this. Like, it goes all the way up the chain in the collective owners, I think. And that's why the statement from the Rangers was so explosive, because Dolan would technically be his boss in some capacity. And I would suggest it's probably in their best interest, that job, to – it's almost like a political office. Change it up every 3 years, you know, whatever it is. Change it up. You ran your course. It's not that you did a good job or a bad job. It's just time for some fresh eyes. The game continues to evolve. Maybe you've been in the trench for too long. Maybe you've been getting pulled at from every side, because I'm sure every team is calling up all the time wondering what happened, why did this happen, why did that not happen. That might be a smart play.
I don't think it should be one person either. I think it is kind of a committee, but have a two or three person where they all got to come to the same conclusion or close to it.
Well, I think maybe another way to do it, or another way to look at it, perhaps, is why does that person have to be an ex-player, the head of player safety? Why does it have to be?
It's the only league that does.
If you're a judge, pardon?
It's the only league that does. Like, generally, it comes every suspension in every other league comes from the office of the commissioner. You know,
because in my, you know, like a judge. You get assigned a case. You're not an expert on somebody that steals a car. You're a judge.
Who are you thinking, Ray? Like a former ref?
Pardon?
Are you thinking like a former ref?
No, somebody totally disassociated with it. Like a lawyer. It doesn't have it. Like, why not? It's just law. You're reading the rule book, aren't you?
Here's the thing. I don't disagree with that.
Okay, so let me give you an example. So how many times have we heard, you know, he shouldn't have hit him. I'll give you a crazy, you know, a non-existent example. But he hit him over the head. That's because he got slashed first. That's what the ex-player says. Geez, he shouldn't have done that. Who cares? He's hit him over the head. If that's not a suspension the first play, it's not a suspension. Is it a penalty? Should have got a penalty. Is this a suspendable play? That's a suspendable play. The players, ex-players, it's impossible not to look back. Look at us guys, to look back at something without emotion. Because we were there. We saw it. We don't like a guy. We like a guy. You're tied. There's always a connection somewhere. A lawyer, a non-insider, if you will, they don't have anything.
Cellino and Barnes, get the skullets out. Cellino and Barnes, you're done for five games.
I think it should be, and I don't disagree with that. Why not have a committee that has a bunch of different voices from a bunch of different backgrounds that are voted in by the owners and by the league. I'm sure the PA should probably be involved in that process, and it runs through that committee. So that way, if you do want a former player on there, great, because he can give his opinion as to what he sees from instinct and from experience. And then you get the lawyer that goes, well, this is what I see from the letter of the law. And then, like, to me, if you got all your bases covered, then it doesn't come from a biased position.
But
where
here's a way around it as well, because my understanding is Bettman has always, I guess, accepted that he didn't play the game and that there's a code and a history that he respects, so he's going to let guys who have done it be the ones who police it, so to speak. You know, and hence why Colin Campbell is, you know, his role, and this, you know, George Parros and Shanny and all these guys who have played that position. And I don't get the impression like that happens with other sports. That doesn't mean that they don't survey former players or, you know, counsel certain players like a Goodell or a Manfred or whatever. I think a way around all this would be just have everything come out of the commissioner's office. Like, have other people, even if other people are making the decision, put the target on Bettman's back. He's like, because he kind of takes himself out of this. And I get the impression like it's somewhat calculated. Like, go yell at Parros, don't yell at me. Well, if every suspension, like every other league for the most part, is the commissioner is suspending you, then that's the guy who has to answer for it. And that's the guy who can explain it. And then it's filtered. Everything goes through the commissioner. And there's where you get your explanations. But here it's like, well, Parros is the boogeyman, and he's the one that's ruined the game, where he's got bosses, he's got checks and balances. But, you know, because I don't get the impression
that
happens elsewhere.
And I would say, Brian, we don't really have, none of us have the information about the pressures. And I'm not saying, oh, it's a difficult job, that type of pressure. I mean, like, the forces that would be pushing on either side of George Parros and whoever's in that job. You got general managers, you got the league, you got the Players Association. Everybody's tugging and pulling, trying to get their way. And it's not easy. But I would say we've got enough history that that there's been enough decisions made where you go, you know what, I'm not so sure about that one.
You're right, Ray. But here's the one thing I will say, and I don't know if you guys agree with me or not. The league is probably at an all-time high as far as least dangerous than we've seen in many years.
All time.
Would you guys agree with that or not?
Yeah, in terms of craziness and
does
wildness.
Doesn't mean there's still a ways to go in certain things, hot button things, absolutely. Like, I believe, like, I know we're being hard in certain situations, but I look at it and the game has never been, you know, faster, more skilled. And these plays are really outlier plays. Like, this isn't, like, Parros and them are not every day. I know the Gossespierre got this suspension the day before. I didn't like that play at all. But point being is, we're not seeing five suspensions a day and all of that. Like, the league is pretty, for the most part, I think it's pretty safe out there, and they've done a pretty good job. There are times where a scenario like this, where it's become very, very polarizing. And that's what we focus on, not the everyday stuff that's kind of been running pretty smooth.
Yeah, the day-to-day has cooled down a lot. I mean, we haven't seen a game like that last night. You know, I can't remember the last time we saw anything close to that. And I don't think we'll see it again anytime soon.
No,
yeah, but it doesn't mean that you still don't try to get better.
No, you're right.
Try to get more efficient.
And they're going to.
Like, yeah. No, but are we? We have another hockey guy that is the only guy at the top of the chain of the player safety. You're suggesting a different way, Brian. That's my point. Like, is it going to get better? I don't know. It hasn't in 20 years. The biggest advancement was when Shanny took over. Things changed.
Mm-hmm. Ray's right. This is the beginning of respect and disrespect.
Yeah, well, it's been a good start.
Well, there isn't. It can't go there, hey, O-Dog, because I got to go do the game, man.
He's
That's
done.
Right. That's right.
I can only argue with Hayes so much.
That's right. You got bigger and better things to take care of.
Well, no, no bigger, better. Just, you know, like, I got to eat before the game. Like, that's the important thing.
Okay. Well, go race spec the chicken parm or whatever you're about to get after.
I'm going to eat whatever I can get my hands on at this point.
Okay. Go do that, and we'll catch you on the game tonight.
Okay, boys. See ya.
All right, buddy. There he is. Ray Ferraro, TSN hockey analyst, joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. They take away the fears of buying a pre-owned vehicle by sharing service history, lien history, and accident history. Find out more at MapleToyota.com. Yeah, listen, I've said this for quite some time. I think it's strange that the suspensions don't come from Bettman directly, even if he's not the one making the call. Put right. the shield up for everyone else. You know, like when there's a big announcement, it's Goodell, it's Manfred, you know, it's Silver. It just – and I think I understand where Bettman's coming from. Like he's always – it's almost like he got in the game and he's like, I know it's not my game and – I'm not the one that's going to necessarily change the code or have an understanding of it, so we'll let former players figure it out. But, you know, that's another thing where Perros, people yell and scream, well, he was a fighter and a goon, so of course, you know, and then it's like, okay, take that away from the whole conversation.
Right.
The emotion of it all, the hyperbole of it all, well, and filter it through Bettman, and then I think that would probably go a long way in easing some stuff, and it might lead to Bettman maybe changing some things and probably being a little bit more forceful, because if it's simply on his desk, then he may not want to deal with a lot of the fire that comes with these decisions. But
and that's why I honestly believe like the league has never been safer. Like we're talking about this hot button topic. Were you guys aware of the, you know, Joaquin Blitchfield suspension the other day where he elbowed McKinnon in the head? No, nobody talked about that. That's
never
a San Jose player.
I never heard of
exactly.
That.
Exactly. Nobody's talking about that.
And like, you know how the game has changed in terms of safety. The game has changed more than ever in terms of you being a player that never, if you don't want to fight, you don't really ever have to worry about fighting. There was basically from 1920 until about 2015, if you got to the league, you're like, I have to fight at some point. Like something's going to happen. Someone's going to grab me and start throwing. Like, even if I don't fight, I have to learn to get my gloves off and hold. That is gone. Like, that has been completely eradicated, last night notwithstanding, I guess, with the guys who started. I understand occasionally.
Right.
But, like, Austin Matthews, I kind of expect he'll never fight in his career.
He'll
Mitch
fight.
Marner. They might, like, at some point. But the point is, when he came in the league, like, oh, I'm sure you were like, at some point I'm probably going to get into a scrum or someone's going to grab me. Like, you know, someone's going to grab me and start throwing, and what am I supposed to do?
That's how it happened. Hal Gill, I slashed him, he slashed me, and I was like, I guess I'm going. I'm going in the NHL.
Yeah.
And fighting a Monzi 6'8". What the hell are you fighting him
and
for?
And I was throwing air bombs up in the air that didn't even come close to connecting. And he was so tall, he was punching the top of my helmet like a cartoon, like Coco Bonks.
Right.
And I didn't land one punch, and I sat in the penalty box, and Stu Grimson skated over the across the ice with an ice bag and put it in the penalty box. And I go, what's that for? He goes, your knuckles. You just fought in the NHL. I just said, whatever, man.
You're the Grim Reaper. I love it. Shout out. Yeah, you're thinking about something here with the lawyer, though. Someone wrote in, we got to get Wendy Sokolov down to the NHL front office.
Yeah, and my apologies. I did not know Cellino and Barnes. Cellino died in a car crash or a plane crash last year.
Yeah, he passed away. Like,
my regards. I did not know that.
Yeah, I mean, you're not being disrespectful. That's just it's a name that we know, right? Like, you know.
The most famous commercials. Absolutely.
Isn't there a guy in Buffalo, too,
There's William Matar. He's big.
Yeah, Matar.
Hurt in a car called William Matar, which I still contend is not his real name.
Yeah, it's
not. So Kyle Lowry is out tonight for rest. Must win game. He's out for rest. We'll touch on that next. So the Raptors are back in Tampa tonight, taking on Washington. And the standings would suggest the season's already over. But the actions of the Raptors would suggest they just want it to be over. Because this is an absolute must-win if you're still trying to get into the play-in. Right?
And Kyle's just not playing.
And Kyle Lowry is out for rest tonight, which to me,
they don't want to win.
I'm actually shocked by this. Like, I'm shocked that Lowry would accept it. Like, wouldn't you expect Kyle to be like, I'm playing tonight?
Yeah, then why did Kyle play the Lakers then?
Exactly. And why did you keep him? Like,
this
is infuriating to me that they would keep him. Clearly, they had some sort of plan, and then you sit him in a must-win. What are you telling people about what's going on here?
I agree, man.
Like, what is the priority?
First time in a long time we've said, this is a butcher job, guys. Sorry, you did win the championship 2 years ago, but this is nonsense.
Yeah, it's ridiculous that you kept him. ridiculous. And right. Listen, you need two to tango, but there would have been a team that clearly would have taken him. They just maybe weren't going to meet your price. Well, if right. you're going to sit him in a game you have to have for rest, then you take whatever price it is because he's done. He's yeah. not a part of the program anymore.
Yeah.
Like, Kyle's not playing in the biggest game of the year.
And what has he had? Like, refresh my memory. Not exactly a grueling schedule for him in the last month.
He's been resting almost every other
yeah.
game.
Like, come on.
Like well, he can
they
go
They don't
tonight.
Want to make the playoffs. That's what it is. They don't
yeah,
want
but why make... didn't you pull the pin earlier instead of this facade that's been going on for the
exactly.
past month?
Sit everyone tonight. Sit Siakam tonight. Sit, like... Default the game.
That's right, and start defaulting 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, like all of a sudden now you're like, oh, we're resting tonight? Like, come on.
Goofy.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have the answer. All I'm saying is that if Kyle's healthy and they just rest him, they don't want to win the game.
Exactly.
You put your best players in the lineup to try and win. Kyle is their best player, and he's not in.
And he's not in for rest tonight, which
yeah. –
You know, I've been a proponent of them trying to bottom out, but they haven't bottomed out because they kept Kyle. They beat the Lakers because, in large part, Kyle Lowry. If he's on the other team, which I think he could have been because the Lakers were kicking tires, then you're probably that much further, you know, down. And you look at the Magic. Like, Orlando has just decided we're done. The Cavs, done. Pistons, they tanked. They got rid of everything. Everyone, but like, why didn't you just buy them out?
Right.
Like, if you were going to make the deal, but you don't want to use them in the biggest moments, then what's the point? And I'm so curious as to what Lowry thinks about all this. Like, clearly he's cool with it.
Yeah. Or is he laughing, saying, I don't know why these guys kept me because I'm not coming back here. Like,
there's
gotta wouldn't
be
he have
something.
Relayed that message to them? Yeah. Don't even bother keeping me because I'm not re-signing here. He's got an idea, a pulse on the situation. So does his representatives on what he'd be asking for in a two-year deal.
Yeah.
I don't know who brought it up a couple days ago, but Iguodala, wasn't it a two-year deal for like $15 million? It was
yeah,
Ramona.
Yeah, that's been right. the report, you know, that Lowry's – that's what he's asking for. He wants another couple years at about $25 million. And that may have caused an issue with the teams that we're going to acquire.
And he will
him.
Probably get that.
Well, he might, but how – like – how strange, and they might bring him back. Maybe that's a part of the plan, and maybe it's, again, they're trying to lose. Like, you can't tell me they
well,
want to win tonight.
No.
You can't,
that's
you
my
can't
question.
Keep Lowry out for rest.
If you're doing
you
post-game, is there anybody in the media that cover the Raptors that are going to ask that question after the game? Why was Kyle Lowry not in this game? Isn't it a simple question?
Well, it's Nick Nurse that'll answered? Answer it, but I'm not sure it's on Nurse. Like this,
but that's
this
the
is
Charlie
like asking
Montoya.
Charlie Montoya. It's the same thing,
right?
It's not, you know. It's
Nick
this
Nurse
would be
is
Masai
a big factor, Brian.
Maybe
like
he's
the coach always makes out the lineup sheet. That's what they want that power to do. So he's got to be a factor in it.
He's got to have an answer.
And yeah, you're
listen,
right.
He'll be talking before the game, after the game. Like that's going to be a primary question. What is the point of all this if
mm-hmm. right.
in a game like tonight, where you're actually playing something that is supposed to be meaningful? And Lowry right. is out for rest. Like I get it. It's been a grueling season, and there's been ups and downs and all that. But you can't go tonight and take the next one off. You know, like
yeah,
it's
that's tough.
It
I
just
agree.
To me, this is just a blatant white flag, and I just cannot help but go back to the trade deadline. Why did you keep him if you're
mm-hmm.
not playing him tonight?
Mm-hmm.
What was the point?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And I don't think there is any explanation that can lead to me understanding that. And
yeah,
this is a hiccup. This is plain and simple. Well, it's a hiccup.
But you're not going to get a straight answer. But I think that question needs to be asked. Like I'm sure Josh would ask it. Like he would probably say why, or unless he feels like he's got the answer already. Like maybe somebody in confidence has given him, and he can't, you know, break that confidence. But we're sitting here, three of us, going why. Like that's, and I'm sure the fans are sitting at home going, what the hell?
If you're still a believer that they can sneak in, which again, the math would suggest it's not happening anyway. But
right.
if you have any shot, it's got to be a win tonight. Maybe they win without them. Maybe that's possible. Washington's not
sure.
a great team anyway. Like the Raptors could still win tonight. But you're three games back and you've got six games to go. You got to have tonight. Like, it's an absolute must-win, and Kyle Lowry is out, not because of a nagging injury, but because of rest.
Right.
It just it screams of
they don't want to win.
They don't want to win. And there's really no understandable explanation as to why you didn't decide to trade him if you were going to throw in the towel anyway.
Right.
But this is where we are, and this is what they're dealing with. All right, you got panel work tonight.
Tomorrow, is this tweet from the grappler stupid returns?
Okay.
We're going to dig some up. He's got to dig up his own tweets, and we'll decide. We got to go in blind, though. We can't see them. It's got to just be posted up, okay. And we decide if it's stupid.
And do we try and get Haley Salvian on the show
Please.
To respond to Al's brother?
Yeah, I think we have to, don't we?
Okay.
Let me call Haley up and see if she's willing to come on. She might not be, but yeah. If she's willing to come on, Al's brother will get him on. He'll be in there tomorrow. We'll have a little cage match. We'll figure something out.
So fun.
All right, fellas.
All right, there's the O-Dog, Jeff O'Neill. Brian Windhorst will join us in 20 minutes. His take on Lowry not going tonight due to rest. Bit of a gong show in Indiana with a former assistant, obviously, here in Toronto, Nate Bjorkgren, the head coach, and things are going south there. We'll tell you more about it. And MJ is still coming up. Mike Johnson at 6:25. He'll have a part of the call tonight, Leafs have, so we'll catch up with MJ. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. So I'm sure you've seen this online, Noodles, that one of the Paul brothers, because you know how Logan Paul is going to be fighting Floyd Mayweather. And this is the rare appearance, because Floyd Mayweather is probably the most hated athlete. And he plays a heel, like that's what he does.
Yeah.
And he's incredibly successful because he's never lost a fight. And he promotes as well as anybody because of the role he plays. You know, he talks smack, but then he goes out there and backs it up. And everyone's waiting for him to finally get beat. And I think this is probably the first time in his career where he's going to be like the good guy, the lovable guy. Because these Paul brothers, that's all they do is they try to troll people.
People hate their guts.
Hate their guts. But to their credit, I guess, as well, they've built up a massive following. They're YouTubers, but they've got tons of subscribers, and they're making millions of dollars.
Yep.
And the younger brother, Jake Paul, he's the guy who fought Ben Askren recently and won that fight. And
wasn't it a basketball player? Is that the guy? He fought the basketball player and knocked him out.
I can't remember who it was, but he knocked him out like pretty badly, too.
That guy had a glass jaw. Like it was. I mean, he's put together, though, I will say. Like I'd be laying there just –
He's a big boy. Yeah, they're both big boys, and they do have a history of boxing wherever they come from. I guess they did grow up in a gym, and they have boxed before.
Right.
But the older one, Logan Paul, like if this is legit, Mayweather is going to beat the hell out of this guy. And like I believe Paul is significantly bigger than him.
Right.
Because Mayweather's not a big guy, but like even at Mayweather's age, you're not beating this guy legitimately. Like there's just no way. Unless he takes a fall. But if for him to take a fall when he's never lost a fight, you'd have to pay him like $500 million.
Yeah.
Which is an interesting question. Like, what would it cost to get a guy like Floyd Mayweather to take a fall and take an L for the first time in his career? Because he is in the money game. He is a businessman, and he's pretty awful with money, too. He's always looking for new money.
Right, because he's a gambler.
Like, other things. He's just, you look at what, you know, houses, cars, lions, you know, like the guy's buying stuff all the time. And I can't imagine it's necessarily, you know, the greatest portfolio for security long term.
Right.
But
I just, I mean, would you pay to see it? Mayweather, Paul? Like, are you, like, that's not.
I might pay for that one.
See, Mayweather, McGregor, I was like, I'm all for it.
Yeah.
Paul, I have no interest in. Like, I don't know why. I'm not in that YouTube sensation. Like, I don't care about those guys that much. I know I should respect them and all that, but why? You know?
Well, like, I'm with you. Like, it's not, they're not in my wheelhouse.
They're not my wheelhouse.
Right? I don't know who they are. Like, I know them now because they've come on the radar recently.
Yeah.
But I don't follow them. I don't watch them. I don't know what they're all about. This would be simply Mayweather. Like simply what Mayweather represents and the ability to sell that, because I wasn't interested. It was Nate Robinson who he fought originally.
Right.
Jake Paul, and he laid him out. I didn't see that. I didn't care for it. I didn't watch the Ben Askren fight. I didn't need to, because it is a publicity stunt. Like, you know, that's what it's all about, and you're kind of being duped here. But Mayweather is compelling, and if the older Logan Paul is a legitimate boxer, then maybe you can get a few rounds out of it, and it might be worth your money. But I guess Logan Paul ran into Mayweather today, and they're face-to-face. And, or Jake Paul, and he grabs his hat, runs away
his hat.
He's a school kid. Like, what? What are you doing? You think that's cool, and you think that's going to promote the fight? Like, wow, now I really got to see how Mayweather's going to react.
Yeah,
there
I
it is
know.
Up on TSN 4. Grabs his hat and runs.
Like, I honestly still believe a lot of these are staged. Like, they must have had a conversation and go, you know, because some stuff is raw emotion. Other stuff is, like, nonsense. The cameras are around, like, yeah, what do you grab a guy's hat and run? What's that going to cause? Like, you're not going to fight. Security's not going to let the two come to blows right there. So, I don't know. It's weird. I thought that was amateur hour.
Yeah, it is. It's just lame that you think that's going to be a promotional
stroke him one.
Yeah.
If you didn't like him, stroke him one.
No,
right,
he grabbed
there.
His hat. Grabbed his hat and ran away. So now I really got to see this fight. It's going to be wild. Brian Windhorst in 10 minutes on Kyle Lowry not playing tonight because he's resting. Biggest game of the year based on the standings. What are the Raptors really telling us? That more coming up. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app.
Alpine Credits.
Yes, it's your English teacher, Mrs. Nelson. You've been using the word approved quite a lot lately.
True, but...
You know there are alternatives like accepted, authorized, confirmed, validated. Let's try. I own my home and would like a loan.
Accepted-ated.
Alpine Credits, where homeowners get endorsed, confirmed, permitted, allowed, okayed, and approved. Some conditions apply. Alpine Credits.
FSRA License 12616.
This hour is brought to you by Alpine Credits. Do you own your home and need a loan? Alpine Credits can help. Visit alpinecredits.ca to learn more.